Welcome to The Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. And on this episode, Curse of the Black Pearl turns 15, MoviePass refuses to go to Way, and I don't want it to. And we discuss our favorite behind-the-scenes Hollywood stories. We're looking for positivity in Hollywood this week. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, I'm a fellow host, Johnny Davenport.
Hey, Aaron. How you doing today?
I'm doing all right. I'm feeling positive. What about you?
I'm feeling in the neighborhood of positive. I'm in the vicinity.
You had a moment and you just blew it. Your shining star has just crashed and burned, man.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Anyway, we're moving on. Amanda Sink.
Hello. I'll do a little party dance.
There we go.
Positive.
See, that's upbeat. Can we try that, John? A little upbeat.
I don't do like full on upbeat. I only get in the neighborhood of upbeat.
You just do up.
Yeah, I'm not the guy that wears a t-shirt to the concert that he's going to. I'm just not that guy.
What do you do when you go? Do you just hang out in the back and you stand there?
He wears no shirt.
Oh, hey, none of that.
It's a good look. It works for me.
You know, it's only a good look if you happen to look like Zac Efron. I don't think it's a good look for John Davenport.
You don't know.
I'm very close.
Have you seen him without his shirt on?
I've jogged with John. No. No, we're good.
I was wearing a lot of layers that day.
All right, well, let's start with some movie and TV talk. And we are trying to keep this a little fun because Hollywood has been a dour, dour place the last year and a half. And we're tired of the negativity. So that's why our topic is going to be fun story, behind the scenes stuff that we love to talk about because we love movies, we love TV, whatever. So we're going to start with the 4th of July is coming up. Independence Day, the day Will Smith used to own. And then he just gave it up because he wanted to be serious. Whatever. He used to be known as Will Smith's Weekend. What are your favorite movies revolving around Independence Day? Let's talk about that.
I think my very first movie that I can think of that is important for Independence Day, it's actually a tale of warning, something that we all need to pay attention to and take heed of. Because I've always grown up and lived by the water my entire life. So whenever it comes to Independence Day and enjoying it, my family's always been about, let's go to the beach. And you know what's at the beach? Sharks. They have sharks at the beach. So, of course, I think an important Independence Day movie is Jaws, so that we all learn to not go in the water.
That's a great lesson.
That is a great lesson. You know what we should teach kids? Don't swim. Stay out of the water. Stop having fun. If you get in the water, you're going to be eaten. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
By a mechanical shark.
No.
That doesn't work.
It was real.
Yes.
They told everybody that got killed in that movie actually died.
R.I.P.
Yeah. You never saw Quint again, did you? No. That was it.
Their careers might have died, but they're still alive.
One of my big ones, I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Ah, that was mine.
No, it's not.
That's a really good one, too.
Yeah.
That's the best one.
Here's what I say, because I've said this to some people, and they tell me, that's not really a good movie for Independence Day. I'm like, what more do you want? It's about bonding with your friends. It's about going out and having fun. It's about knowing when to cover up a crime and not when not to. So it teaches you a valuable lesson.
It's almost like a 90s sitcom right there.
All it needed was Kirk Cameron, and we could have made this happen.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. What do you think, man? That was one of yours,
well,
too?
Well, that was mine. So same you reasons, took my I thoughts. Assume? Well, I mean, who doesn't want to spend their day of freedom thinking about the possibility of losing all of their freedom from a murder?
There you go.
But this story is talking about...
What are you waiting for?
We do not condone this. But also...
Wait, hold on. I just need to remember that scene real quick.
Yeah, the twirl.
The scene.
That's a good scene.
But you pictured it with my voice. That's weird. That's creepy. Cool. I like it. A little hot, but weird.
Well, Jennifer Love Hewitt was probably smoking like 40 packs a day that day.
You almost offended the crap out of her, but I liked how you stopped yourself. Good job.
On the topic of death and despair,
That's one of my favorite lines in a movie history. That's balanced. I like that.
It's a great line.
Yeah.
It's a great scene. It's a great movie. And
sorry, I keep cutting you off. Go ahead.
No, it's fine. So on the topic of
death
and despair,
yet?
Are you going to let me talk?
Yeah.
Is this what it's going to be?
Yeah, go.
Shh. The Purge. Now, I am not saying that all of them are worthy of watching on every 4th of July, although I do watch the new ones every 4th of July because that's really? When they come out. Yeah, they go see it in the theater.
Because you really want 12 hours to
no,
go
no, no,
out
no, no. I don't watch like all of the old ones. I watch whatever new one has come out.
They're not old, really. I mean, they're like 5 years old.
You know
old.
What I mean? You pick
you,
up.
You sound like they're grandpa movies. Whatever no. the latest one is?
Okay, whatever the latest one is, yeah. I don't know if I'll see the new one. But anyway, the original one, the first one was really good. I liked the second one a lot. The last one I felt was kind of meh. But it is a story that I feel like a lot of us have thought about, especially whenever you're real angry or you're having a rough day. You wish no. you had a purge. John, no. don't lie.
I, you know, I've never actually gotten to the point where I'm like, I am going to murder every single one of you people, given the chance. I've never actually gotten to that point. I'm usually like, all right, I need some me time. I need
John,
to get away from
I
you.
Talked to you during the work the weekday. Are you sure you haven't? Because it feels like you have.
And it's not everybody. It's just like a few somebodies who happen to end up on your list.
Just that one Claire. You know who you are, Claire.
You shouldn't have taken my food out of the fridge.
I am not admitting to any of this.
Hey, nobody's doing anything. We're just saying, hey, it's kind of a cool
imagination
fictional concept. Yep. Kind of like helping your friends cover up a random murder.
Yeah.
Right. All I'm saying is that last week we talked about true crime, and this is the sort of thing that ends up in evidence.
I would never do such a thing. It's horrible. Anyone that does it is wrong. Did we cover our bases? I don't know.
I think we did.
Okay. What about Independence Day? Where do we land with, of course, the Independence Day film with Will Smith? Johnny, you gotta have some love there, right?
I do have some love there, and I actually have some very fond memories of the movie, but when I think of Independence Day or the holiday of Independence Day, that was a little bit too much on the nose for me. So that's why when I thought of my second movie, it was going to be Glory, because Glory is so much more of a Independence Day kind of movie to me. It kind of has to do with, you've seen it, it has to do with freedom and getting mm-hmm. your rights, and it deals with the part of what formed this country. So that's why I really gravitate to that the most. Besides, Matthew Broderick wielding a sword, come on.
That's pretty cool, except there's nothing threatening about Matthew Broderick in any shape or form.
That's why Matthew Broderick wielding a sword is kind of funny.
Oh, it's funny.
So he uses it more for humor than he does for patriotism.
No, he's
trying to be patriotic.
Yeah, I'm talking about you. You watch it for the purposes of
just that
comedy.
Scene. Not the whole movie. If he says that, no. he will be banished from film loving of all time.
That's true.
No, it's a beautiful movie. And I get a little bit jealous of Denzel Washington because that's like the movie that made Denzel Washington. And of course, every single time that people watch that, they're like, oh my God, look, he's got no shirt on. And unfortunately, they're whipping him. But it's still like, I still wouldn't mind looking like Denzel Washington today.
I don't
Such
think anyone
an uncomfortable
would.
Uncomfortable laughter I have on that. I'm like, John, I don't know if you can keep going. Nope, he went there. Yep, he sure did.
I'm not even really a little bit surprised that he went there.
I'm not either. But back to Independence Day, which made Will Smith's career, I had a kind of a, I don't know, an epiphany about this, about both the movies, actually. Independence Day, to me, is like the movie I have to watch on July 4th. I don't know why. It's just a fun, cool movie. A lot of great personalities, a lot of great character moments. Very good time. And on the same token, I kind of think I could watch Independence Day Resurgence and wonder if maybe the country doesn't deserve movies. Maybe we shouldn't have independence if this is what we're going to do with it. You know what I mean? So it's kind
Agreed.
Of a fun dichotomy there.
A little bit of the yin and the yang.
Yeah. Any other ones for you, Amanda? You got any?
No. Those are I usually don't spend a whole lot of time on the 4th of July watching movies. It's like one of the few days out of the year that I'm not sitting in front of a TV, I
what
guess.
What are you doing?
Usually I'm going to have like a cookout with people or I'm going to go watch the fireworks or something. So I don't know. I just – or I'm being lazy and just not – maybe I'll read a book or something.
What about The Patriot? Anybody like The Patriot? I'm a fan of The Patriot. I really dig that
I mean,
movie.
It's a good movie, but I don't know – like I guess I don't really have movies that I am like I need to watch it on the 4th of July to feel that freedom inside my soul.
It makes you feel free to know that like – they killed Heath Ledger. I mean, he just keeps dying. And
whoa.
Sorry.
Bad joke.
Whoa.
Thumbs down.
Was it though? I'm laughing.
You're the only one.
No, I really dig that because when his son dies and you see.
I really dig that when his son dies.
No, when Mel Gibson's like running to try to, you know, as soon as a bad thing happens and he's running to just slaughter everybody, I just think that's an awesome scene. It's just an amazing scene. I love that scene. Love it.
I'm sure.
What about Braveheart? You ever think Braveheart's a good one to watch?
No.
I think there's plenty of people who will watch Braveheart.
Heath Ledger doesn't die in that one.
No, he doesn't. And there's
which
too
is
much,
why he said no.
There's too much independence under their kilts. So I'm not watching it. No. Mm-mm.
That's where you draw a line?
I have weird lines, John, and that happens to be where one of them is. Yeah, it's right there. Right below Mel Gibson's kilt. That's my line. All right. Well, we just thought we'd take a little look at the 4th of July. Now, let's revisit MoviePass. It has been ongoing at this discounted rate for over a year now, and I think we can maybe see this as a permanent solution, or is it dying on the vine like many people believed, Amanda?
Oh, I probably have a very different opinion than the majority of the people who think about MoviePass. I understand that they're basically breaking even at this point. They're losing money on the majority of the pass holders, and they're maybe breaking even on some of the others and gaining on a few other select people. But I think that when I think about MoviePass, I'm relating it to Netflix. Netflix had a very similar structure where they were putting out a ridiculous amount of money. They were losing and losing and losing. To this day, they still have a ridiculous amount of debt, but they're still a profitable company.
I remember laughing at Netflix. I'm like, that'll never work.
Yeah. And now look at them. And the reason is because when you have a business, and I'm not a business person per se, but I feel like when you have a business model that works for your consumers and you're constantly trying to reevaluate it and expand it for those consumers, you're growing with those people, which is what a good business model needs to have. And MoviePass is continuously trying to do this. They started off with a reasonable price, then they upped that price. And once they were like, that's a little bit too high, they lowered it and they drastically dropped it down. Mm-hmm. Now they're introducing different ways. They're offering different types of subscriptions. They're offering, you know, promotional annual options.
There's like a family plan.
There's a family plan that's coming out. And that one will be a little bit tricky because from my understanding, they're still going to charge per person. It'll just be one card.
Which makes sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, it could be easier in terms of that unless you have the family who wants to split up and see different movies or go to different theaters.
Well, now you're
getting
greedy, mom and dad. You know what?
That's true. That's true. But I mean, in relation to Netflix, Netflix has been taking hits and hits and hits in terms of money because their prices were so low. And this is the same thing. MoviePass is kind of modeling after Netflix, I feel like. They're trying to buy film, like production companies and stuff like that, mm-hmm. is from my understanding. Distribution.
Yeah, they just did American Animals, I think.
Yeah. So with them gaining that and people buying tickets for their own company, they're not losing money in that situation. Now they're gaining. So with them continuously expanding their business model, I think they're going to be okay as long as they really focus on the consumers and also finding different new innovative ways to get that money in that isn't from the consumers.
John,
I have no idea what she just said.
Words. So many words.
There was words and Netflix was brought up and you got my attention there for a couple seconds and then you lost me again and it sounded like you said something. I read these articles and I tried to do some more reading and it was like looking into like all the Pythagorean theorem just started flying off the screen at my. I was like being strapped in the chair in Battlefield Earth and I'm trying to be learned something. My brain just won't take it. I have no idea what's going on right now.
I think they're going to be all right.
So you have an opinion on MoviePass?
This will be fine.
You think they're going to be fine?
No, if it was going to fail, I feel like it would have failed before now. And I think even though people are saying that it's not making its sort of money, its money back or anything else like that, I think there's something going on to keep it going at this point because we haven't heard about massive layoffs. We haven't heard about anything else. All we keep on hearing is about the steps they keep on making to expand what they're doing. So if they were going to fail, I really do think that it would have happened by now.
Yeah, I think there's still a possibility it could fail or they got to raise their rates or something. But they're being very smart. They're capturing the audience And then they can use that audience against theaters. They really can, because if they've got 4 or 5 million steady moviegoers, they say, hey, oh, you don't want them? We'll make sure that they can't go to your theaters then. If you don't want to work with us and give us a percentage of your commissions, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. They're getting buying power right now. They're building it up. I think it's a very smart business plan. And AMC, well, I mean, they were kind of, weren't they like taunting AMC recently? I mean,
they were. They posted the best thing I think I've seen in a very long time. So they posted a tweet and they put up basically a poll on Twitter. Mm-hmm. The question was, are AMC theaters ticket prices too high? Option A, no, I'm rich. Option two, yes, I love MoviePass. 90% have been going with, yes, I love MoviePass.
I want to meet the 10% that said I'm rich.
That's, I mean, those are the people that we're never going to meet and talk to. Mm. So I do have something that will hopefully help ease people's minds. Like a direct quote from the CEO, Mitch Lowe.
Sure.
Is that how you say it? Low or Lowy?
I'm sure low. It's low. Okay. But let's call him Lowy because that's hysterical.
I just like
come
to make
here,
sure.
Lowy, come here.
So I just love the fact that his name is Mitch. It's like, hey, Mitch, what you got?
So from this Business Insider interview that Mitch did, his response was, when asked how the business model works out for them in the end, because they keep seeing that they're losing money. His response was, I always find it interesting that to get to that question, because, you know, Netflix has to borrow billions of dollars a year to stay in business, to create that content that they don't earn enough money to pay for. If you read the reports about Spotify, they spent $2 billion more on content than the revenue they generated, and we're no different. We're building a big subscriber base of film lovers who, over time, we have dozens of ways to make money. For example, marketing on behalf of studios. The film distribution system is completely broken. It's so hard to get a film out in the theater that's not a big blockbuster hit. And there's hundreds of millions of dollars spent marketing those films. We're an incredibly effective partner for those studios. We have people who are coming to our site, you know, 4 or 5 times a week where we can sell advertising. And we're on our way to get to break even on our subscription.
I get what you meant, John, all those words.
That's a lot of words, but I do think he's smart in the fact that he's trying to compare himself to Netflix, but Netflix makes their money back hand over fist, I believe.
But it took many years to get there.
It did take many years, and their original content, because they wanted to get to the point where they were 50% original content, and I think they're there, they're almost there. That took a significant investment. And they were not making the money that they were putting out. But they're finally there. So it's an interesting comparison. I don't think they're quite comparable just yet.
Well, he also brought up Spotify, which is another one. But the big thing that I took away from this, not only do I think that they have a chance of surviving you know, as a business, but they're also considering and caring about independent films. They're not concerned about the big blockbusters. They pretty much don't care. They're trying and working to get those independent films into a movie theater and getting people in the seats to watch it. And I think if there's any movie theater out there that's working against that, they're working against all of those independent filmmakers, and that's a slight at them.
Ooh, look at you, like, throwing it back at it. AMC.
I do. I love AMC.
She's like frothing at the mouth over this. I mean,
oh man, I love my MoviePass.
You worked up.
Okay, and just as an addendum to the MoviePass story, we do got to bring up that even though we talked about how AMC doesn't like them, apparently they don't have a problem with competing against them because they just opened a new, or they are beginning a new option where for $19.95 a month, you get 3 movies a week in all formats. Doesn't roll over or anything, but so they are competing. It's not unlimited, but how many people go to more than 3 movies in a week?
Yeah, not many.
No, not many.
So they're paying about double from what MoviePass is.
Not about double. It's about exactly double.
So they're doing double, but they're getting to buy their tickets in advance, which is a huge deal that MoviePass, basically everything MoviePass doesn't offer, the things people have criticisms with for MoviePass, AMC was like, no, we got this. We're going to open up our own format.
Which is funny, because I remember them bitching them out on Twitter.
8 months.
Like, hey, MoviePass is a really dumb thing, and it's not going to work, and you guys suck, and you're going to lose money, and you're going to be broke, and you're going to be homeless.
And they just ripped it off.
Yeah. And then they realize, well, you guys are like making a lot of money.
You have 3 million subscribers.
I don't know if you're making a lot of money, but you're getting a lot of our subscribers. And I know you're going to hold power over us if you continue to get them.
Well, clout, and the thing is, AMC is now going to lose money off of theirs because they're losing ticket purchase, where MoviePass, they're still getting money from that company.
Yeah, AMC would still get a full payment.
They still get them. A full payment from MoviePass. So now they're just throwing that money out of their own pockets just to be like, spiteful.
Yeah, I think so. I'm like, you're not going to get out of my now. Go.
But
yeah.
Let's be honest, it's still a pretty sweet deal.
I don't really, whatever benefits the consumers. I like that people are competing, and every chain seems to have their own thing now, so yeah. I'm all for that. But MoviePass is also doing a thing we should tell people.
They sure are.
They're starting something in the summer that might put some people off from it, make them go, you know what, AMC is better. I don't know.
The price ends up still working out when you look at
Explain
it.
Explain real quick what it is.
So,
real quick.
Yeah, there's
more monologues.
There's three different things that are happening. So the first is people will start to see non-annual members, monthly members, will start to see what they call high demand pricing, which means that if you see certain movies at certain times on opening weekends, there may be a charge from $2 upwards.
They will, I assume, tell you in the app, right? Like, there'll be an upcharge.
They're going to have to. I mean, because you're going to have to pay for it anyway.
Can't just be like, hey, bitches, that was a bad time for you to go. That's going to cost you $2.
Yeah. So, I'm sure they'll tell you. They haven't released the details of that because they're not, you know, doing it next week, but it will be coming real soon. Everything, all of the options will be out before the end of August. Mm-hmm. So the other two are actually good options for MoviePass members.
Bring a friend, right?
Bring a friend is one option. So you can actually bring someone and the additional price for that ticket will be near retail price. Mm-hmm. But they haven't released how close it'll be or how much discounted. And then the other option will be for you to pay the upcharge anywhere from $2 to $6 to see movies in IMAX or 3D. All of those formats
I'm
and people
fine
have
with
been
that.
Wanting.
I think that's actually
so you're fine. Paying $10 a month and you're still pay the extra couple dollars or whatever to see it in the format you want if you wanted to see that. And so annual members aren't going to see that high demand pricing, but they will be able to opt out of mm-hmm. those other two features if they want to.
So there you go. Now you got all the facts. I think it's, you know, it's really competitive right now. You can hear John Silence. He doesn't give a rat's ass about any of this. But I will say that this is good for people that love movies because people have complained forever that it's too expensive to go. It's kind of hard to do that when you have all these options for cheap.
The biggest thing right now is that the MoviePass option is still available for people who don't have AMC near them. And
I feel like you're working for them at this point.
I'm not. I was actually just about to start to defend AMC next. Ah. I was going to say an AMC, although, you know, despite how they may have come across and being a little spiteful and vindictive.
They were downright bitches.
Their business marketing plan was not the best.
And I love AMC, but downright Twitter bitches.
But
they were twitches.
They're at least, it's creating a competitive atmosphere, like you said, but it's benefiting consumers, which is what is still a good thing. AMC could have gone a different way and just continue to cripple MoviePass.
Exactly. I need more money for Coke and hookers.
Yeah, that too. I mean, I'm sure that's AMC's
Coca-Cola
top priority.
Coca-Cola from the fountain thingy at the AMC.
And what's the hookers relation?
Fishing. Fishing, yes. Catfishing. No, fishing. Sorry. All right, we're going to move on because we don't need any more of this. Man, I wonder where it's going to be next year. Now, let's go to You Just Don't Get It. Amanda, you get to pick a movie that you're a fan of. Universally lambasted. People either don't like it, whatever. Critically, personally, however. But you love it. Tell us why you love it. What's the movie and why you love it?
And I do love it. It's the first Resident Evil. It gets... Ugh. See? This is... You just don't get it, John.
No, I'm pretty sure I do.
I love it. I don't care what people who are avid gamers and love the original story, because the games are fun and I get that. But this is still a great movie. The franchise as a whole gets a little ridiculous, but if you're focusing on the first one, it's bloody. It has great dialogue. It has a ton of fun in it. It's action-packed. The cast is wonderful to watch. It is a movie that I get joy and pleasure from rewatching over and over again. It's
actual joy?
Yeah, I love watching it. It's one of my favorite movies. Seriously, it's probably in like my top 10, top 15.
Of all time?
Yeah, I love this movie.
Have you
movie.
Only seen 17 movies?
No, but I seriously, I love it. I remember the first time that I watched it, and when they give you the plot twist of the main character, Alice, my jaw
that
dropped.
That would require a plot.
You know what I'm saying.
I got you.
I don't want to, yeah. I mean, in case people haven't watched it.
It's 20 years old, whatever it is. True. It's fine. Yeah. You can say what the.
But when it's determined, because she doesn't have her memory, and it's determined that she was actually part of it the whole time. Like, she was part of the initiation. So I was utterly shocked. I don't know if it's just because I wasn't thinking it was going to be anything substantial in terms of having any story. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was going to be blood and let's kill these. So it was, to me, I loved it. I'm sorry that you don't enjoy it, people who don't like it. I don't want to tell you you're wrong, but you just don't get it.
John, do you have a response? You obviously have a feeling about this.
I recently tried to sit down and watch this movie again. And when I say I tried to sit down and watch it, I literally sat down. I was doing it to be supportive to the person who needed to watch it. Like, that person was like, I need to watch this. And I'm like, okay, I'll do it with you if it makes you feel any better. Because I used to think it was a decent movie. And no, I can't. I couldn't make it. I tried, and even all the things that I was trying to make fun of for it, it was like kicking the kid with the helmet. I really just couldn't do it. I'm sorry that you feel like this movie is a fantastic movie that nobody understands. I think you're alone.
I don't think no. I'm alone.
Hang on, I'm going to interject here. She's not. I will say, I don't like Extinction. That's the second one, right? The second one was awful, whatever that was. But I have enjoyed... I don't think they're good movies. None of them.
They're not like great movies.
You've had your moments.
Hey,
you're right.
Hey,
you're right. You're right.
Aaron has the talking stick now.
He does.
I think all of them are bad movies. Plot-wise, really dumb. They are insanely insipid. They are just not intelligent. They, as a whole, they are cinematically obtuse. But I have enjoyed every single one of them except that second one. I love them in 3D. I would go, I couldn't even tell you what the plots are anymore. I can't even think about what happened in the fifth one. Who the hell? I don't remember. I know one of them had Michael Scofield in it. That's about all I remember of any of the plots. But I remember going to the theater and kind of having fun with every one of them. I remember talking to Justin on this show about how much we enjoyed those movies. So as much as I think they are not good movies, I get why people would enjoy them.
They're great popcorn movies. They're just movies that make you... Well, I'm sorry that you're not understanding where we're coming from.
Maybe Gummy Worms?
Gummy Worms are great. I don't know where you're going with this.
Yeah,
maybe Swedish Fish movie, ooh, but I don't know about popcorn.
Swedish Fish are delicious, man.
You're just kind of selling this movie a little bit more.
I got to have something substantial to be able to enjoy this movie. And Swedish Fish or Gummy Worms or something like that, that's something a bit more substantial. Like, I feel like then I'm getting a little bit of a treat because I'm actually shoving something in my face that's worth it.
Mm. Wow, you really have feelings about this movie for some reason. Did it break up with you?
Maybe.
These movies are no more intelligent than the Fast and the Furious franchise. They're just as dumb.
Whoa.
Hey, flag on the play.
They robbed safes and stole them and drug them down the highway. That's very intelligent. I never would have thought of that.
My point is, they're both dumb franchises that people, not everyone loves, but the
those
people
movies
who
made
do
money. Those
love.
Movies made money. They really did make money. They were huge, like, worldwide.
So
in terms of budget, they made their money back. Every one of them did.
Hey, the first time I saw it, maybe the second or third time I saw it, maybe when I bought it and put it in my collection, I really enjoyed it. But for some reason, this current version of myself couldn't watch
maybe
it.
Maybe it's because you're a grumpy old man.
John, we're over
it's
it.
Possible.
Why are you still railing against it? Let's go. Let's move on to something that if you say you didn't like it, you're wrong. It's a significant anniversary, and that's Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl. On July 9th, 2003, 15 years ago, a film came out that launched Johnny Depp's mainstream career and crafted an enormous series based on pirates, actually spawned from a ride, a frickin' theme park ride. So we're going to discuss why Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl succeeded, what its sequels did or didn't do, and how it changed Johnny Depp. But before I get there, I want to give you three little points. Disney was unsure whether or not to release the film in theaters or direct to video originally. The studio was interested in Matthew McConaughey as Sparrow because of his resemblance to Burt Lancaster, who had inspired that script's interpretation of the character. If they chose to release it direct to video, Christopher Walken or Cary Elwes was going to be one of their first choices. So that's interesting that they actually toyed with going a completely different direction.
Mm-hmm.
It eventually made its way to $654 million worldwide, and people praised, and it's important to remember that before this movie came out, Johnny Depp was an indie actor. He had very, very little mainstream success. He was not a bankable box office star. In fact, the idea that he was in this movie shocked many, many people because he's such an auteur at that mm-hmm. time. He was very much an independent actor. But people praised his performance. Roger Ebert called it, "It can be said that Depp's performance is original in its every atom. There has never been a pirate, or for that matter, a human being like this in any other movie. His behavior shows a lifetime of rehearsal." There, with that, John, what do you say about Curse of the Black Pearl? What do you think of when you think of that movie?
I think of this as some of the movies in which my friends and I would get together and have a huge party of us go see in the theater. I remember how much fun it was to just gather with everyone to go see these, and actually the whole series of Spawn Fort. I loved the feel of it. I loved everything about it. I loved how it kind of brought a whole new idea of fantasy to us. And it was something that was enjoyable. I mean, at that time, we were still kind of starved for a good fantasy kind of feel of anything. And this one really brought it to us in a nice, fun way. So, yeah, that's what I think about when I thought. How about you, Amanda?
I think that it gave something for everyone, because there's comedy in there, there's action in there, there's fantasy in there, there's the kids feel aspect where it's not too adult but it's not too childish. Like, it really hit the points for everyone to be able to enjoy, if not all aspects, some aspects of the movies. And people loved it. I remember after the first one came out going to see all of the others, and people dressed up for the midnight showings, crazy, like just totally loving it. It was, this is a movie that.
Back when we were allowed to have midnight showings.
Yeah, right now they're like 10 p.m.
Yeah, let's go to the midnight showing at 7.
Hey, who really wants to go to the midnight showing anymore?
I'm too tired for that.
Man, it was awesome though. It was a lot of fun. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
Well, it was fun back then, but now I'm like, midnight. I got places to be in the morning. I got to go and get brunch. I mean, no.
I got to get brunch. Yeah, they also like inspired Halloween costumes, which for me, when I'm watching a movie, if you have some sort of, for whatever reason, if you have a movie that has characters in it that are easily replicable, if that's a word. I don't know if that's a word. I might be using that wrong. But if you can replicate those characters really easily into real life, people can grow more attached to them because they feel they can be that character. And it built that. It made you want to be that character, and it made it accessible for you to be those characters. It was a fun pirate movie that had a lot of humor in it, and it had romance in it. It just had everything.
I will tell you what I remember about it. I remember not wanting to see it because I just didn't care about a Disney ride becoming a movie. The only reason I even went to see it is because I love Johnny Depp as an actor back when he used to actually act and not just be cartoon characters in every movie. And I was curious, like, you're going to make Johnny Depp a pirate? That's just, I assumed he was actually going to be like Orlando Bloom in a way. That's really the kind of character I thought he was going to be. The reason why I walked out of that movie and just loved it is, A, they added a supernatural element to it, which made it far more interesting than just a pirate movie.
Mm-hmm.
And B, you had absurdity. The reason why the first movie is so much better than all the other ones is that Jack Sparrow is not the main character. He is not the main character. Everybody loves him. He's their favorite character. But if you really watch it, he's not the lead. Orlando Bloom is the lead in that movie. He's just the guy that gets top billing because every time he comes on screen, he steals every scene he's in. He takes it. He throws it on his back. He goes off. He falls in the ocean. Whatever he does something.
Gets drunk.
Gets drunk and he takes over. He just dominates. And it's absurd. He's the character that doesn't belong anywhere in this world. He's completely absurd. But he also has moments of true heroics. There's a couple moments in the movie where he actually does everything he should do, where he's like, that's the one thing that was really missing for me in the sequels. I feel like if you go watch Black Pearl again, what I love about it is there are moments where you think he's a total idiot, and there are moments where you think he's the best pirate ever, and they say that as well as you see it.
Mm-hmm.
The other movies, I feel like he's just a boob most of the time, as opposed to, like in that last one, which I enjoyed the movie despite him. He's like an idiot the whole, he's like a drunken idiot the entire movie. He's never hero Jack Sparrow. He's just dip Jack Sparrow.
You yeah, know what I mean? They made him redeemable. So they made you, like, you were a little bit hesitant with him in the first one.
You and can't then, trust him, but yeah, right, they made him
then,
a little too
But then he heroic. Was redeemable. So then you had those moments where you were like, oh, okay, all right. You know, he's not all bad. He's not completely obnoxious. He's actually a little bit smart. And you get to see that fluctuation, that the duality in his character that you weren't expecting. And like you said in the other ones, that duality is kind of lost because they wanted to really pull out the dramatics of it. Because let's face it, Johnny Depp is great at being dramatic, but the character had more basis and foundation in him in the first one, which is why it did work so
when
well.
When you mean dramatic, you mean the absurdity part.
Yeah, they, yeah, yeah. Just, I mean, just the character being so loose and
so sparrowy.
I mean, yeah, but
yeah, they made it seem like he was heroic by accident in the other movies, mm-hmm. where seeing it, him purposely decide to be heroic versus him doing it on accident, I see one makes him a more layered character, but the other makes him a bit more of a lot more of a cartoon character, which is I think what they decided to go with in the end. And it is unfortunate because seeing him more layered is something for all of us would have been better to see.
And now the love story was good too.
I mean,
I really thought the love story, like Orlando Bloom is one of those guys where I've never found him particularly charming or particularly charismatic. I really think he's a handsome lad.
He is handsome.
That can shoot an arrow and probably do some sword fighting, but he's not somebody where I'm like, man, I got to see what he's doing next. I mean, if you tell me Orlando Bloom's doing this, I'm like, Orlando Bloom's still acting? I mean, that's where I'm at. So, but Keira Knightley, that's a completely different story. I think she's just enrapturing and she was great in those movies.
Yeah, she was.
The love story worked. And when you get away from that love story, I think the movie suffers. And let's go ahead and talk about the sequels. What do you think, Johnny, what do you think the sequels did wrong overall, outside of what we already talked about?
Well, I don't know if they, to me, I don't know if they actually did anything. Did different. To me, I don't really see them as doing anything wrong or doing anything different. To me, I found them just as enjoyable, just as much fun. With the exception of the change of the more cartoonish Jack Sparrow, I still thought that they were well worth the Pirates of the Caribbean title. I thought they were well worth being part of that world. And I really didn't see anything wrong with them. I love them just as much as I love the first one.
I get loving the movies because they're still fun. They are still the movie that makes you want to go, the franchise that makes you want to go see it with a bucket of popcorn and a bunch of friends and just...
And talk like a pirate for a
couple Yeah, hours. And just enjoy it.
Arr, can't wait to see this movie.
But I really didn't like the way they changed Johnny Depp because, I mean, we've talked about some of it already, but John, you started to touch on a point that I wanted to go back to, which was that he was less intentional. And I feel like in the first movie, he was doing things that were heroic and didn't seem like you still didn't think that he was doing it intentionally. But deep down, he had that layer that it was intentional. So like right. It still appeared that he was doing it all just kind of like a drunk pirate and mm-hmm. By accident. But they completely removed that layer of that character where he had that intentional heroism in the other movies, which made him suffer completely. You can't change the entire character and what we loved about it and still expect us to love that character the same way. It's almost like you're introducing a new character. And that's kind of what I felt. I felt like I was getting the same kind of feel, but they changed so many different things. And I'm fine with changing the story and helping it progress and helping the character progress. But you didn't help him progress at all. You kind of took away what we loved about that character.
Yeah.
And it suffered.
And the stories just got too overdone. I think they tried too hard.
They were trying hard.
They made so many words and plot devices and turns. And I'm like, what? It's a Pirate of the Caribbean. I mean, it's not like this. Darren Aronofsky should be nowhere near this set. You know what I mean? But it feels like at times they thought they were being that anal, and I just kind of it hurt it at times. I still enjoyed them. The third one I did not like at all, but every other one I did enjoy them. It's just, you know, I really feel like them tweaking that character too much really did affect it. But what do you think the legacy is, John? I'm sorry, were you gonna say something?
I was going to say, I found them a lot easier to understand and enjoy than an article about MoviePass.
Fair enough.
Well, shots are fired.
Fair enough. Cannon is lit. What about the legacy, Johnny? What do you think you would want to see more of these? Could you see a reboot? How do you want this to go?
I'm not really a big fan of the idea of rebooting everything. So that being said, I don't want to really see a reboot, and I don't want to see any sort of further pushing of this for quite some time. I want to be able to go to Disney and enjoy the ride, because what we haven't touched on is that the ride at Disney at both parks has been changed since the movie has come out. They added Jack Sparrow to the ride. They added all portions of the movie to the ride, and I think that makes it a lot more fun. And one of the reasons why I enjoy the idea of how much of a layered character or even like a cartoon character that Jack Sparrow is that when you go to Disney and you're in the Pirates of Caribbean side of the park, he can actually show up and you can see a cast member doing a very good rendition of Jack Sparrow. That's so believable. And you see so many kids laughing and enjoying it. I think, ask me the same question about 10 to 15 years, maybe I'll change my mind. But for right now, let's just let this ride out.
Yeah, I don't need any more of these at all. I don't need it rebooted. I don't need any additional ones added to the franchise. There's not a single scene in any of the sequels that is memorable to me. So I have no desire to go rewatch those. But the
first fight on the thimbles in the second one, those giant thimbles or rollers, whatever they are, the things that they're having a sword fight. I love that. That's one of my favorite scenes in the series.
Maybe I should try to rewatch them, but the first one I have a lot of...
Too busy watching Resident Evil all over again.
Right? the first one I can almost recall the entire movie because I watched it numerous times, and it had that rewatchability, whereas the other ones just didn't for me.
You lied. Pirate. I love that.
And I guess this is just something that I think was fun and I think should be left alone. Let it do what it was meant to do and give you that fantasy world that's been created not only in film, but also, as Johnny's pointed out, in theme parks. Like, let that live on without trying to bring it back and try to do something more with it and change it and ruin it.
Yeah, I would add to that my biggest problem with the franchise was they never really handled Elizabeth and Will's love story. In the third movie, it really bugged me because I thought that was really crappy way to leave it when you know those characters probably aren't coming back. And I get it, they're going a different way, and he had like every 10 years he could see his son. I just thought, man, it's not that kind of story where I need that kind of ending. I needed something happy for them. In the most recent movie, you actually got that ending. You got that happy ending, finally, and I think, like, let it go. As of right now, I don't need any more. I think you finally ended the story. You ended it well. Let's be done with it. So I'm with you guys.
Yeah.
All right. Well, before we get into upcoming releases, we wanted to take a second and extend our thank you to our Patreon supporters who donated at patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. There's some bonus content there. There's some bad movie nights where we talk about a really, really bad movie. Most recently, Battlefield Earth. My God, shame on everyone who had anything to do with that movie. That was a fun conversation. I don't know. But you listen, you let us know. patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. All right. We've only got one review to talk about this week, and that is a movie called Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. We're going to try and give you a spoiler-free review of this. So it's going to be a little bit, well, it's not too tricky to dance around. If you've seen the trailer, unfortunately, the latest trailer kind of gives you the entire plot. Owen and Claire are brought back into Jurassic World because essentially there's a volcano going to erupt and they need to decide if they're going to save the dinosaurs. The dinosaurs basically are being left for dead. So the government has decided they're not going to intervene because it's a business property. They don't want to interfere in a business property, so they're going to let the animals die. And therefore, Claire and Owen go there to try to mount a rescue operation. But as they go, they find out there might be a little bit more to this story than what they initially thought. That's all I'm going to really say about the plot. For me, Jurassic World, I know it gets a lot of flack. People thought that the story was not that great. Give me any of them but the first one where the story was great. Their movies where dinosaurs go rah,
they
rah,
kind
rah,
of blend rah. Together after a little while.
Yeah, they're fun though. I mean,
they are fun.
Who doesn't like to see dinosaurs? Yeah,
and Chris Pratt is so good in his role. He is meant for that. I don't know if I agree with that, actually. You don't think so?
No, I feel like
he's meant to train dinosaurs. Like, this is his true calling.
No.
No?
I mean, he's good, but I don't... He's not Indiana Jones of the dinosaur world or anything. He's not... He's good. He's just good. It's okay to just be good. Everybody's got to be fantastic anymore.
I don't think he's got to be fantastic. I just think that this role really suits him. Like, I don't think I could picture many other people, if anyone else, in that role at this point.
Well, why would you?
I'm just saying, if I could remake it.
If you did remake it and put somebody else in it, I don't think it'd be that big a deal. I could name three or four actors that could take that part. Bradley Cooper in a heartbeat would be better than Chris Pratt. I do. I believe so. Don't get me wrong. On Guardians, guy owns. But here, I think he's good. And it's okay to be good. You don't have to be mesmerizing all the time.
Everybody's got their own
now, Bryce opinions. Dallas Howard, enchanting. She has soft skin, and I like her a lot. Yeah. So what did you think of this sequel? Because I'll be honest, walking into the movie, I was a little bit dreading it because I thought the trailer looked cheesy. The concept sounded really bad. Like, oh, we're going to get them off the island before the volcano blows. Nobody knew there was a volcano on this island. I realize they spent a lot of money on dinosaurs, but they can do geographical studies too, right? So what did you think ultimately of Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom?
To be perfectly honest, I kind of forgot about it, and I haven't watched any of the trailers. I've kind of tried to shy away because I've noticed that there's more information than I want to see. So I don't even think I've seen that latest trailer that you mentioned. I have no idea how much it gave away.
Because the plot does take a couple turns, and most of them are in that second trailer.
Oh, no, that's too bad.
I mean, to me, a movie is good if it doesn't need that and it's still entertaining. And I know where it was going, and I still found it entertaining. So.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know that going into it, but I also wasn't really hyped up to see it. I was like, oh, Chris Pratt, dinosaurs, this will be good. It'll be like the other ones that just kind of blend together for me with the Jurassic World franchise. And as I'm going along, I'm getting more and more interested. I have tension building up. I have adrenaline. I have anticipation and anxiety. It really captured my attention, and I did not think it was going to. I thought I was going to get a little bit sleepy because, you know, I'm tired and I'm old anyway. But it did keep me, you know, encapsulated in everything that was going on, and I found the story to be interesting. I found the movie to be emotional, and I was not expecting emotions from a dinosaur movie, but... They're cute.
They actually do several things where they make the animals more of characters than I think they've been in the other movies.
They do.
Yeah, they really, really expand on Blue's role from the
first one. I would almost relate it to...
From the first of the new ones.
Yeah.
Jurassic World.
I would almost relate it to how humanistic the Planet of the Apes felt.
I would not.
Not like the acting, and I'm not talking about any of that. I'm talking about how they make you feel like they are a person and you emotionally connect to them. The creatures themselves.
More like a great pet. Like, I felt more of, man, that's somebody's poodle. I don't want anybody to hurt anybody's poodle. I never felt like this is Caesar or anything. Blue maybe comes close because Blue has more of a personality and a mindset, but
there's not acting, so you can't totally compare it to the same thing. But the feelings that the feelings that you get when you're watching that creature, that animal on screen, is, to me, it was similar to what I felt when I was watching Planet of the Apes. It really makes your heart kind of go, many different aspects.
Well, let me ask you in terms of the plot, which, you know, don't give away, but if knowing now where the twists are, do you think this was a more original plot, or is this pretty much predictable, just an entertaining one?
I think that they got a little bit cheesy with the volcano. Like you already mentioned, there's no way you did not realize this was a big possibility.
I thought that set piece, though, was amazing.
It was.
That whole
it was
section
great.
On
it
the
was
island
beautiful.
With the volcano, which looks crappy in the trailer. Like, I'm like, this is going to be dumb. Was amazing. I was on pins and needles that entire
And there
scene.
Was there was a scene, a part in that, you know, that set piece that actually... It grabs you, man. It's really deep. But I feel like they were a little bit cheesy with that introductory part of the story. But as it progressed, I felt like it was more solid and had a better foundation and was more grounded. And I respected that. I enjoyed the story from beginning to end. I can just see the beginning. I was like, oh my gosh, are we really doing this volcano situation right now? Like, it really just reminded me of that Fast and the Furious ridiculousness.
Which I'm still hoping they ride dinosaurs, like, in the next Fast and Furious.
Can we please merge the universes?
Universal owns them both. I want to see Vin Diesel riding a dinosaur.
I am going to pledge to that. Sign me up. What did you think of it?
I really felt like the plot, and it's hard because there is kind of a major plot twist, and I don't want to give it away. I thought that was interesting, and at least they were trying to do something different. And the way that the film ends really sets up an exciting third film.
Yeah.
I think I don't know where they're going, and I'm not about to spoil it for anyone, but based on what I saw, I can't wait to see where they go with that third movie, because I think that it's going to be really, really fascinating. And it's a really wide open world as to where they can go, which is great. Mm-hmm. I love that. Now, do you want Claire and Owen to come back for the third movie, or do you care?
I do, but I don't necessarily need them to be a thing or
a couple.
Yeah, I don't need them to rehash that. I do
stay a couple. Between the last movie, they've moved on and now they're reuniting.
Yeah, now they're near each other again. I like the friendship aspect between them. I feel like they have a really good chemistry as characters and also as actors on screen. So I do like the two of them there, but I guess it would really depend on the type of story that it goes with. Now, Chris Pratt's character, Owen, has a significant tie to the dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it would be weird to get rid of him.
Which we get more of in this movie. So we got like a glimpse of it in the first one. We really got a deeper understanding.
And it really did it well, I felt. Mm-hmm. They didn't just say, okay, here's what's happening. They gave you glimpses and pieces and aspects of the movie that it was actually relevant and necessary to hash. Right,
Claire they almost forget about in like half the movie.
Sort of.
She's just running around. In boots, no high heels this time.
Thank goodness.
Very important.
Realistic.
Anybody stand out for you before we wrap it up?
Blue.
Blue?
The dinosaur.
The dinosaur scoot.
Seriously, that. Also, the granddaughter, the little girl, and I don't know the actress's name. There was one part that was like a little bit, I turned my head and I was like, well, that wasn't really the best choice of facial expression.
Maisie Lockwood. So Isabella Sermon is
right. Okay, yeah. And I really felt like, especially for her age,
because the person funding the operation is the grandfather who worked with Mr. Hammond, and this is his granddaughter.
There you go. Yeah, get that recap in.
Yeah, there you go.
But I feel like she was, for such a young age, she really took, when she was on screen, mm-hmm. she had my attention. More so, like, when she was on screen with Chris Pratt, I was more focused on her. That's how good I felt she was. I really want to see what else she does and whatever type, you know, what other types of movies she gets into. But between her character and Blue's character, those were the two that stood out for me.
Yeah. And I really like both of their story arcs are really cool throughout the movie. And I really didn't think they were going to amount to anything. Ended up being pretty cool. All right. So that's Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. I think you can tell we both enjoyed it. If $10 is the full price of admission, Amanda, what do you give Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom?
I can't do quarters, can I?
No.
Not on our show. I love quarters.
I like the game. I'm drinking.
I'm going to round up. I'm going to go $7.50.
Okay. I'm going to go $7.
Okay.
$7.
Right there.
All right. Just check it out. You know, it looks dumb. Plot sounds stupid. Give it a chance. It's a lot of fun. John, what's coming up? And we're covering 2 weeks because July 4th, we're going to have a clip episode because we are taking the week off.
Yay for week off. All right, so coming up on the 29th, we have Sicario, Dia del Soldado, the drug war on the...
Ooh, I always like when you get into your little accent.
You know, if you say it super fast, that doesn't make it cool. That just means confusing, because I don't know what the hell you just said.
I don't care. It sounded awesome.
I didn't say it super fast. I said it just as fast as it needs to be said.
Well, how can you not stutter when you're talking Spanish?
He makes an
Let's not get into that.
Can we just do this whole episode in Spanish? We'll just do that.
Can you say that again for me?
All right, Day of the Soldier. Go ahead. Or Soldado. Sorry. Yeah.
Day of the Soldado. So, Dia de la Soldado. See, now I'm studying in Spanish. See what you did?
Great. You butcher both languages. Nice job.
I can butcher them equally. All right. So, the drug war on the U.S. and Mexican border has escalated and as the cartels have begun trafficking terrorists across the U.S. border. And that's when the U.S. says, oh, hell no. To fight the war, federal agent Matt Graver reteams with the Mercurial Alejandro. I love saying that name. Alejandro.
I like listening to you say these names.
Yeah.
All right, so this is directed by Stefano Salima, and writer Taylor Sheridan is back with this one, and it stars Josh Brolin, Catherine Keener, Benicio del Toro, and Isabel Moner.
And early word is great on this one. I've checked
it. Yeah, I really love the fun, so I can't wait for this one. All right, coming up next, we have Uncle Drew. After draining his life savings to enter a team in the Rucker Classic Street Basketball Tournament in Harlem, God, that's a mouthful, Dax is dealt a series of unfortunate setbacks, including losing his team to his longtime rival. This is directed by Charles Stone III. It stars Tiffany Haddish, Nick Kroll, Kyrie Irving, Shaquille O'Neal, Nate Robinson, and Little Ray Howery.
All right.
And finally, on the 30th, we have on Netflix coming out, Mohawk. Late in the War of 1812, a young Mohawk woman and her two lovers, get that? Two lovers? Eh? Mm-hmm. Battle a squad of American soldiers hell-bent on revenge. This is directed by Ted. I can't pronounce his last name because whatever. But stars Kenyatta Horn and Ezra Buzzington and Eamon Farron and Justin Rain. The trailer for this, I took a look at it, and if I were to take a 70s exploitation movie and mix it with something historical, I think that's what you'd get out of that.
Mm. Oh.
All right.
Okay.
So like spin in your grave and mix Last of the Mohicans.
I'm interested. I am interested.
I wasn't interested at all, and then you kind of like sold it a little bit.
What's interesting about this is the girl who stars, Kenyatta Horn, whatever, I had it right the first time. She is actually part of the Mohawk tribe. So no. I thought that was cool. All right. So, Amanda, of these three movies, what are you going to see?
I'm going to see Uncle Drew because Tiffany Haddish sold. It might not even be the best movie.
Have you seen the trailer for it?
It looks awful. But I'm bound to laugh because
of
her
dedication. I respect that.
I just know I'm gonna laugh, and that's really like I'm hoping for a good laugh.
It does look funny, yeah, in its own way. But it looks like
it looks dumb.
Yeah,
it's dumb. It's fine. It's dumb. I'll watch all the other ones too.
Yeah, I really want to see Mohawk, but I'm going with Day of the Soldier, Day of the Soldado.
I was gonna say I don't think you're.
You know what's funny is I like the first one. I don't love it like some people do. I just liked it. I really didn't see a need for a sequel until I watched the trailer, and I'm like, that trailer looks awesome. I've seen that.
Yeah. I thought it was very okay, but then I saw the trailer, and I'm with you. It looks really good.
Yeah, more Benicio del Toro and more Josh Brolin. I'm in. Josh Brolin is ruling my summer, by the way.
I'll let him know.
Yeah, call him.
I'm sure he'll like to hear that.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Jen? What are you going to see?
I think I am going to see Sicario. That movie, the first one really blew me away, and I really wish I can just hold off on it and watch it with my dad like I did with the first one, but I don't know if I can wait that long. So, poor guy.
The love isn't that strong.
I mean, he's my dad and everything. He's still going to be my dad after the weekend. So
there you go.
That's true. Unless he isn't. And then you got to live with it. But that's cool. Let's go to the next week.
That was so depressing. Let's move on.
That was dark. All right. So first up on the 3rd on VOD, we have Beirut. Caught in the crossfire of the Civil War, CIA operatives must send a former U.S. diplomat to negotiate for the life of a friend he left behind. This is directed by Brad Anderson, stars Rosamund Pike. Yes, ma'am. I will be there for that. John Hamm, Mark Pellegrino, and Dean Norris. Then we have The First Purge on July 4th, why not? The film is the prequel to the Purge movies. It's going to be The Purge. And it stars Marissa Tomei, Lex Scott Davis. Yeah, okay. It's the Purge. Then on the 6th, the movie I'm probably most excited for is Ant-Man and the Wasp. As Scott Lang balances life between being a superhero and a father, Hope Van Dyne and Dr. Hank Pym present an urgent new mission that finds Ant-Man fighting alongside the Wasp to uncover secrets from their past. Why is it always secrets of the past?
Well, you can't have secrets of the future unless you have a DeLorean.
Right. I guess you're right. All right. So this is directed by Peyton Reed again. He did the first one, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Yep.
He did. All right. So the star is Michael Douglas. Michael Pena's coming back. Paul Rudd. Evangeline. I would throw my wife down a set of stairs for Lily. And Hannah John Kamen.
Wow. And right. Still no Edgar Wright directing. Want to keep pointing that out. Yeah. You're never getting it, nerds. It's never going to happen.
It's never going to happen. Never going to happen. All right. Finally, more Josh Brolin love with Legacy of the White Deer Hunter on July 6th with Netflix.
White-tailed deer hunter.
What did I say?
White deer hunter?
he's hunting white people.
Well, there's a distinct difference in the movie.
Maybe it's like Bambi the sequel where he's whitened down. He's whitened down oh, hunt boy. People.
I would say we could just carry on.
The great hunter Buck Ferguson. God, I love that name, Buck Ferguson. And his trusted cameraman Don, what a sucky name for a cameraman, mm-hmm. set out on an epic weekend adventure to reconnect with Buck's young son. This stars Josh Brolin, Carrie Coon, Danny McBride. Hey, that means Aaron's not going to see this. And Scoot McNairy.
I'm out.
Yep. All right. So, Aaron, besides the white deer hunter, which movie are you going to see?
Beirut. I'm most excited for Beirut. I really am. I mean, yeah. I want to see Ant-Man. I didn't love the first one, so I'm not ecstatic. Beirut, I've heard nothing but great things. I've heard John Hamm is fantastic. I got to see that movie. It got a very limited release to begin with, so I wasn't able to see it in a theater. So video on demand, here I come, Beirut. And first Purge, I'm sorry. No Frank Grillo anymore? Bye.
I know, got right?
I'm out.
Right.
Sadness.
That one almost feels like too close to home for me, and I'm not going to do it.
Because...
Because you also kill people for 12 hours?
Yeah, a 12-hour window where you're allowed to do it.
What is wrong with you two?
Well, that's what the movie's
about.
That's
what you just said.
No, I just said it feels like it's too close to home, as in, like, we're way too close to it happening.
Oh. I thought you meant, like, your desire.
That
like your actual
makes
actions.
Sense, John. Okay. I don't know where that came from.
What kind of person do you think I am? All right, Amanda, moving right along.
I'm with Aaron on this. I'm going to see Beirut because the rest of them look okay. I'm not even going to get into Legacy of Whitetail Deer Hunter because that looks awful and has terrible reviews. And
Legacy of the White Deer Hunter, though, I would really like to see. I just feel like it could be.
It could be so much better. That's the one without Danny McBride.
It's like Moonlight, but with rednecks.
Right.
So bad.
I like it.
Johnny, what
that
are you
deer's
seeing?
Deer's got a pretty mouth. I'm you know what, I'm not ashamed to say it, I'm all in for Marvel's Ant-Man and the Wasp, and it's for all the wrong reasons. I can't wait to see Evangeline Lily be the Wasp.
You're
and
a simple
I'm so
man.
Excited.
Paul Rudd
I
is,
am very simple.
Paul Rudd
give me,
is
give
pretty...
me a badass woman and I am there for it.
Go ahead, Amanda, you won't let it go, so just go ahead.
No,
give
I
up.
Wasn't gonna say it. I ended it.
Well, you did it twice. I figure you got to get it out.
No,
Paul
I was
Rudd,
just
going to
say that Paul Rudd was a stellarly good-looking man.
I know,
man.
But he's no Evangeline Lilly.
Yeah, he is no Evangeline Lilly. I mean,
I don't know.
They would be cute together.
Well, let's go ahead and hook them up.
Let's try it. Why
let's,
not?
Let's ship them. You can't do that because a wasp would kill an ant.
You don't know True. What their love has. Like, they may have boundaries.
As soon as they try to
respect.
Mate, her stabber would stab him. So
maybe she can move it.
I don't think you can.
Maybe he'll like it.
You can't remove
it. Stuck in this conversation.
Maybe he'll like it.
A wasp cannot remove it somewhere because if they remove it, the wasp would die. The wasp is part of their.
But what if he likes it? A little rough.
Our From the Outside In topic this week: Hollywood.
Thank God
has been inundated with scandal and sadness for the last long while. We are sick to death of talking about it. So this week, we're going to bring forth a little joy. We are going to share happy, cool stories we found revolving around Hollywood. Maybe a celebrity doing something cool for a kid, fascinating behind-the-scenes story of a production, maybe a personal triumph, whatever it is. This is about sharing some favorite Hollywood behind-the-scenes stories. Are you guys ready to have joy?
Wait, you said it has to be a happy story?
It says favorite. That means a good
okay,
story.
You did say happy, though, so I just wanted to make sure.
Or cool.
Whatever that story is about, like, John Landis and the helicopter, the opposite of that.
Yes. Exactly. So, Amanda, what are your favorite kind of Hollywood stories?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, I have a soft spot for whenever they do something for charity. I love those stories. It's not an obligation when it's not an obligation for them to do it. If it's something like where they feel they need to or they were pressured into it or something, then it's not as interesting.
Or it's contractually obligated.
Right. But I also love hearing about like wild stories that happen on a set that nobody else knew anything about and trying to find those markers in the film.
That's
I
good.
Love it.
That's always fun. John, what about you? What are your favorite kinds of stories?
My favorite, I mean, it's funny because I've often said that I don't like it that we seem to have paparazzi and everything that kind of cuts down the mystique to our movie stars, But at the same time, when I hear that there's fun stuff happening on the sets and our movie stars and our TV stars are a part of it, and those kind of stories that seem to humanize them more in a more positive light, that's the kind of stuff I like to hear.
I love to hear overcoming odds with production. I think that stuff is just fascinating to me. I don't really know if it's definitely not a happy story. It's sad for everybody involved, especially the shark from Jaws. My God, that had to make everybody's life hell. The documentary on that is fantastic. But stuff like, you know, Psycho is a big favorite of mine, and knowing how meticulous it was to get all 77 of those shots and everything that was done in films like that, where they overcame odds to get something beautiful or some random thing occurred and they have a beautiful moment on screen that we are treated to and we love, and we don't know why we love it, but we love it, you know, just random things. I love that stuff. I love that. I mean, the charity stuff, that's all cool. The cynic in me is always like, well, they probably were contractually obligated to show up as Captain America or whoever they are, but it's still really cool for the kids. And I can't really.
That's where it's at for me.
The kids. But every once in a while, you'll hear a story about an actor doing something really, really cool. And whenever they don't have a publicist handy, somebody else just catches it. That's the stuff that really gets me like, oh, that guy meant it. It's not one of those, hey, so I got a release today that said so-and-so went to a charity for a hospital for a charity. You know, that's not the same thing to me. When somebody captures it randomly, that's a cool.
Agreed.
Cool thing. All right. So before we do our personal ones, you guys might or you might not know or you might know, whatever. What's your favorite everybody knows this story, John?
Story.
So my favorite one that everyone should know if they don't know it is in Indiana Jones, The Last Crusade. So when they're filming that movie, they're filming in the dead of summer. And when they're doing the scene when Sean Connery and Harrison Ford have to be on the Zeppelin, they're all wearing all this winter clothes. And so again, dead of summer on a prop set of a Zeppelin out in the middle of the heat. And Sean Connery decides that he is tired of being drenched in sweat and all these fur coats and all these different layers. So he decides he's going pantsless for the filming of this scene. And as soon as Harrison Ford discovered that he was going pantless, he decided he was going to follow suit. I just love that.
Mad respect.
I don't know if that's a well-known. I've never heard that. And I'm a huge Raiders and Indiana Jones fan.
I'm all for pantsless situations. That was worded terribly. Yeah. Wow. Respect to people who can get paid for that.
Right. I mean, whenever I'm doing pantsless right now, it's so hot in here.
That's a great story. That's great. Amanda, what about you? What's your favorite known story?
You're probably not going to be as in awe of it, but I love the story where Chris Pratt and Chris Evans made a Super Bowl bet because they're both big fans and their rivals were going against each other. And they made a bet and the stakes were basically which hospital they were going to visit and inevitably show up. They inevitably showed up to both of them. Mm-hmm. But I loved that they were just... they knew that they were going to go to one of them and they made it like a friendship thing, but they also, from my understanding, it wasn't something that was like set up with a publicist and we're going to do this and we're going to do that and this is an obligation. It was just something cool. Like, we want to do this and we're going to do it anyway. And they ended up, one of them showed up in the rivals who lost their jersey, like the winner.
I think it was Seahawks and Patriots. Maybe.
Yeah. Showed up in a Tom Brady jersey and like tried to be funny about it and everything. I like that they had like a fun spirit with it and they had like a friendship bonding, because to me, then it's not just, oh, they're really all great on camera together. They're also like good friends outside of it. And they do this stuff together where they're trying to cheer up little kids. I don't know. I just liked it. It was a feel good.
Oh, that's a great one. I definitely am not implying that they're all faking it. I just
I know.
They seem like genuine guys, and I've never seen anything to not indicate that they are.
Yeah. Scotch had actually brought up something similar to that. He liked the stories that involved movie heroes visiting children's hospitals, like Johnny Depp did it as Jack Sparrow, and then Chris Evans and Robert Downey Jr. in Avengers.
I'm actually kind of surprised they could get Johnny Depp to do it.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why. I think he's just one of those guys, and you hear kind of how he drinks like $2 million of wine every month. And you're like, do we want him around children? I mean, I love him to death, but maybe not, you know. But
well, he apparently owns the costume for Jack Sparrow. So he throws it on he throws it on whenever he gets a chance.
He's just like, I need to go to Walmart. I'm going to throw on my Jack Sparrow costume and go get some more wine. I'm running low. can't drink the fancy stuff.
Wouldn't you? Nobody would recognize him that way. Yeah. Nobody would assume, hey, look, it's Johnny Depp dressed as Jack Sparrow.
That's
true. I would go to Pizza Hut dressed like that.
Pizza Hut?
Everything.
Why are you going to Pizza Hut, first of all?
Because for me, like, you're already a huge star. You got millions. It's not about the pizza. It's about you would make those people's day. You would make those people's day.
Pick a better pizza shop.
A better pizza shop? They can afford to go to better places. Go to Pizza Hut where people, the real people are.
What is happening right now?
I have strong feelings about pizza.
I guess. All right. So moving on to my favorite known story. During the month-long shoot in Tunisia, Raiders of the Lost Ark, it was doubling for Egypt, and nearly the entire crew came down with dysentery. And the day they were shooting the fight scenes, Harrison Ford was feeling particularly under the weather. That's how the story goes, right? So rather than go through the arduous task of shooting yet another fight scene, Harrison Ford reportedly grumbled to the director, Steven Spielberg, why don't we just shoot him? Spielberg liked the idea so much, they shot it that way, and a classic film moment was born, where the swordsman swinging a sword, and Indiana Jones just shoots him and kills him. There's an other version of this, where stuntman...
Ooh, is it from the point of view of the guy with the sword?
No, not him. Where he's okay. Like, I did not want to get shot. They told me we would be hanging out for a while. Instead, they killed me. It's very inappropriate. Now, Victor Armstrong was Harrison Ford's stuntman, and he claimed in his book that Peter Diamond, the stunt arranger, had actually set up an elaborate fight between Indiana Jones and the swordsman, and Steven Spielberg refused to stay past 3 o'clock, so he suggested shooting the guy, and Steven Spielberg agreed because he had to be out of there by 3. Now, I'm not sure which is true. I'm sure the Harrison Ford story is a lot cooler and a lot – that's the one I'm going to choose to remember. But either way, it's still my favorite story. It's a cool moment.
It kind of sounds like as long as you have Harrison Ford on your set, you're good to go and you're going to have a fun time.
Sounds like it. Pants off, dance off.
I like it.
The only way that story is better is if he takes his pants off when he shoots him. That's it. That's the only way it gets better. All right. Now, let's get into it. What are your 3 favorite Hollywood stories? Round robin one at a time. Amanda, you can start.
All right. So my first one is Saving Private Ryan. The entire cast, with the exception of Matt Damon, was actually put through basic training. And the reason that Matt Damon was the only one who wasn't was because they wanted to build a natural resentment against Matt Damon.
I love that.
And the the army, basically the instructor, the one who was training them, made it like took it very seriously to the point where they were like, okay, we get it. We don't like Matt Damon. And they were like, no, you're going to keep going. Tom Hanks actually encouraged it to continue going. They had to see it through to the end. So they really hated Matt Damon because he just got to hang out.
Tom Hanks, yeah, you're going to hate him? Oh, you're going to hate him so much more.
He was like, just follow through with it. So yeah, I love that story because I think it's funny, but also I feel really bad for everyone except for Matt Damon. That's not what you sign up for when you're an actor, to go through army basic training.
That would, God, that's why you got great performances from people like Vin Diesel.
Oh,
before
man.
He was Vin Diesel.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
That's interesting. Yeah. Wow. All right. John, what about you? What's your first favorite Hollywood story?
So my first favorite Hollywood story has to do with just, it's a, just a simple little filming thing, but I figured, you know what? Amanda loves Tom Cruise. And what best way to bring out Amanda's love with Tom Cruise, but talking about the fact that during the filming of Interview with the Vampire, there's a scene when Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise are walking through the park.
I remember this
at night. And because like Tom Cruise is a whole foot shorter than Brad Pitt, they actually had to carve out a trench for, and just imagine how long this trench had to be to cover this entire scene, just so Brad Pitt would be the same height as Tom Cruise.
So he's a midget who jumps on furniture.
Right.
That's amazing.
Hey, Brad. I'm gonna need you to make that trench so I can go ahead and get near you. You like that? Yeah, Tom. Why are you shorter than Kirsten Dunst? I don't understand what's going on here right now.
He blends in with the Oompa Loompas.
Poor Tom Cruise. Poor Tom Cruise. He's got to wear stilts. That's a good story.
He's wearing the boots that the aliens in Battlefield Earth had to wear.
Wow, we're really stuck on Battlefield Earth, aren't we?
I hate you right now.
My first one is the Blues Brothers. One night while filming out in the countryside, John Belushi, he turned up missing, And so Dan Aykroyd had to go out and look for him. And apparently he walked over to this house that was nearby his set and knocked on the door looking for Jim Belushi. The guy opened the door, and before Aykroyd could say anything, the man smiled and said, "You're looking for John Belushi, aren't you?" Dan Aykroyd walks in the house. He sees John Belushi sleeping on the couch. The man explained that Belushi had invited himself in, went into the fridge, made a sandwich, had a glass of milk, and then crashed on the couch. And then Dan Aykroyd dubbed John Belushi America's guest after that.
That's hilarious. Oh, I love that story.
I also want to point out the Blues Brothers had a cocaine budget. They had money for cocaine. That's the kind of, I have a feeling he might have been high at this moment.
Oh, the good old days.
Oh, I love that story. And that's true. I actually double checked to make sure that that actually was true.
It's the
true.
Cocaine budget or
both? Actually. Okay. Both, yeah.
All right. So my second one is Fight Club. And actually, Kyle Boggs said it much better than I did, so I'm just going to read his comment. In Fight Club, when Brad Pitt and Edward Norton are leaving the bar and Pitt gets punched in the ear by Norton, it's real, and no one but Norton and Fincher knew it was going to happen. The script had Norton punching him in the shoulder very badly, but right before shooting, Fincher told him to hit Brad in the ear as hard as he could. The punch and the reaction from Pitt is 100% genuine and made the final cut. And you can actually, from what I've seen, and I haven't rewatched it to see this, but apparently if you do go back and watch this scene, you can actually see Norton chuckling to himself a little bit after he does this.
If I was Brad Pitt, I would have been beating his ass after that.
There would have been a little bit of reciprocity there.
Yeah, I'm like, director told me to do it. I don't care. I'm still beating your ass. So, yeah, no.
But that's still kind of funny. I mean, I don't know how they can get away with that stuff, but I guess if it's in their contracts.
It's in your contracts? Like you can whoop somebody's ear?
If your director tells that's you, I don't know.
That's an odd add-on.
I don't know.
Wait. I didn't read section 3.4. He can punch me in the ear whenever he chooses. Yep, that's what it says. That's what Fincher wants. That's what, yeah, you want to do the movie? I mean, it's a cool twist. So, all right. Johnny, what's number two?
I'm calling an audible because I know when we talked about this earlier that I had a different one, but I suddenly started thinking about Viggo Mortensen throughout the whole Lord of the Rings series. Mm-hmm. There are so many different little things in that series where he did cool things on accident and they left it in. Like one of them was at one point when one of the Uruk-hais were throwing a dagger at him. He was so good with his sword by practicing so much and getting ready for the movie that he actually, the scene where he deflects the knife off of it because it was supposed to go into the tree next to him, but he ends up deflecting it off the sword because it was going right for him. That was a real thing that happened, and they kept it in even though it wasn't supposed to happen that way. And then there's another scene in, I believe, in the second movie where you got Viggo and he's acting his ass off. He's just like, "I am Viggo Mortensen. You are like the buzzing of flies to me. Watch me act." And he goes and kicks one of these helmets that are on the ground and he ends up breaking his foot on the helmet. And the scream that he lets out when he breaks his foot on this helmet is real. But he's still like, after that, he goes and continues to act all the way through it. And it's such a real moment. And I just think things like that they left in, even though it was just him being a bonehead or him being super cool. I don't know which one of the two. I think it's really fun and cool.
That is really cool. And also, that'll get you fired from Lethal Weapon, so he should probably be careful.
Someone's still a little bit sensitive.
A little bit. All right, so my number two is, it's actually revolving around a friendship. Steven Spielberg and George Lucas, they've been friends for decades. And they've been friends since, really, they both began their careers. They've been friends that long. In fact, Steven Spielberg was the only of his friends to actually believe in Star Wars. So there's two big stories of these two that I really want to mention. He believed in Star Wars. George Lucas himself did not even believe in his own movie. He was really worried it was going to fail and everything else. His friends told him it was going to fail, except for Steven Spielberg. George Lucas was convinced that Close Encounters of the Third Kind was easily going to be a bigger hit than Star Wars because it felt more serious, more dramatic, more grounded, and his was more of like a kid's movie. So Steven Spielberg bet him that he would bet him participation points that his film, that George Lucas's film, would actually do better than Spielberg's film. And they both agreed to this bet. So basically, whichever one won got the other's participation points or a small number of participation points. So Spielberg actually made millions of dollars off of Star Wars because of that. He made like $30 million or something like that because of that bet, which I think is great. Both that they honored it and that he was kind of, it sounds to me, and it always, I mean, it's Hollywood lore, so you don't know how true or genuine that is, but it feels like it was more of a, hey, your movie's going to be all right, man. I believe in you. You know, it felt like that kind of movie.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. They have like a really amazing friendship.
Very, yeah, they've done some fantastic things. They've done some classic movies. And the other thing is they've always had kind of nods to each other's films within their work. But in E.T., it was definitely not hidden, as you see E.T. walking down the street and he sees a kid dressed as Yoda for Halloween, prompting the aliens to shout, home, home, you know, which was just cute. Spielberg didn't tell Lucas about the joke until he held a screening for him. And then later, when Lucas made Phantom Menace, he returned the favor by making E.T.'s race of aliens part of the Galactic Senate.
Hold on. Did he hold a whole separate screening for him so he could see that moment? Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, they are rich.
Oh, my God. That's so sweet, though.
If he,
what?
What? I mean, Skywalker Ranch sounds like, come to my lair and watch my movies. That's what it doesn't sound like. Come hang out with me and my grandma in the basement.
It's still pretty sweet that he was like, I'm going to show him this moment, like a big moment for him.
He showed him the whole movie.
I know, but he showed it in a private screening. Like it's almost like he wanted to be there for that moment.
John, why don't you bring this kind of optimism? Because it's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
I'm just flabbergasted at the moment. Like, we're making a big deal about the fact, I mean, he's got a freaking movie theater in his own house. He's got one at Skywalker Ranch and his house.
I'm kind of a John. Each of them. Hey, look, you know what? We like your optimism. Keep it. It's good.
It's cute and everything, but yeah, but like, it's not. If I had a chance of having a movie theater in my own house, I'm not going to the movies to go see something. I'm doing it in my house.
And I would have
just call somebody up.
Private screenings for my friends all the time.
But he could have
come on over because I got my own.
He could have just told him and been like, "Hey, dude, I put a nod to you in my movie. Awesome, thumbs up." Instead, he was like, "I'm gonna let you enjoy this moment, and like we're gonna enjoy it as friends together."
Or it's like what real guys would do. And as soon as it happened, going, "Dummy, you didn't even know I was gonna make fun of you, did you?" That's what that was.
Wait. Do you think it played out like this? Like the scene happens and like you're actually focusing on George Lucas's face the entire time, and then it dawns on him what happens, and then the camera pans a little bit to the left, and you see like that Steven Spielberg's just been staring at him the whole time, waiting for his reaction.
This is the movie I want.
Filming it for YouTube. There you go. Yeah.
Somebody go back in time and record this moment.
It's
for
like
me.
One of those Game of Thrones reaction videos. Yeah. But he just keeps it for himself.
Yep.
Right.
And he has tons of them, of just George Lucas at Skywalker Ranch reacting to his stuff.
He's got a whole catalog of like being nice to George Lucas because nobody else really is. Like, being nice to George Lucas when Phantom Menace came out. No, it's going to be great. It's going to be awesome. And giving him a hug when everyone's mean to him.
Yeah, Jar Jar's going to be great. Good job. All right. So last one, your number three, Amanda.
So I chose for my third one, I chose Boondock Saints because of how they got the film made. Everything they had to overcome and what they did to get this movie out.
Did they kill a kitten?
No. Well, I mean, sort of, I guess. I didn't see anything at the after credits that no animals were harmed in the making of that film.
Wow.
So, okay. There were a ridiculous amount of people that A-listers that were considered for this role that Troy Duffy, I don't know why, decided, nah, I'm not going to do that. He had Brad Pitt. He would not even consider him for the role at all.
Just bad marketing.
Yeah.
And your movie gets done a little faster if Brad Pitt signs on. I'm just saying.
Overnight captured Troy Duffy on the phone with his casting agent calling Keanu Reeves a punk, which is just uncalled for and just inaccurate.
Well, this guy's kind of known as a douche.
He is. Yeah, he is. And Ethan Hawke, a talentless fool. So he had three really solid choices, and he was like, nah, not going to do this.
This is not a guy I would trust with quality control.
Wait, this is a happy story?
It gets better. This is about how it overcame a lot of bad things.
It sounds like it overcame the director himself.
Really, he is the biggest problem for this. I've heard that many people
are not a fan of his.
He actually he disowned pretty much all of his loved ones after he started to get a little bit of fame.
Hey, it happens in Hollywood. Believe it or not, some of your heroes probably do too.
Oh, yeah, they do. All right. So he had actually worked with Weinstein for a period of time, because Weinstein was like, I'm going to give you $300,000 for the script. I'm going to give you $15 million in production. Like, he was offering him everything. He bought Troy Duffy, the director, a bar, made him a co-owner to try to coerce him to sign with Weinstein. And he ended up signing and gave him no voice whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So after he was like, they basically diminished that because they were like, we're not going to put this film through. So Troy Duffy, after going through all of that, was like, now I got to figure out what I'm going to do. Weinstein had apparently, and this is not confirmed, but there are a lot of people who have said that the movie was actually blacklisted. And so with that, they had no options. The film ran for 5 days, or ran on 5 screens in Boston for 1 week. That's all the theater time it got. Mm-hmm. Blockbuster saved this movie. Blockbuster bought the exclusive rights for the rental.
I didn't know that.
Yep. And they are the ones who actually got it out, and they helped make it what it is. That movie ended up becoming the highest grossing film in the first 6 months of release.
Really?
Yep, because of Blockbuster. If it wasn't for Blockbuster, this movie would have just tumbled and gone nowhere.
Like so many others have.
Yeah. And a lot of the problems start with the director himself. And he just kind of ruined a lot of different things. But the movie still ended up coming out, and it was it's such a great movie, but it came out as a great film, and it overcame all of the odds that it faced. Even Harvey Weinstein. And I feel like that's a big deal, especially in the 90s.
Well, we really don't. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't even want to say his name. He's Voldemort at this point.
Basically. But it's just, it's a really cool story to me to think about. That's where, you know, here it is now today. And it overcame all that.
That is a great story. Very cool. John, what about you? Final one.
My final one. So I've been a longtime fan of the show Supernatural, and there are some specific behind-the-scenes things that happened between Jared Padalecki and Jensen Ackles that remind me as to how this show has managed to stay around for 30, 40, 50 years. I don't know how long it is anymore. But the two of them started out the show as basically instantly becoming friends. They spend so much time on the set together. They're always with each other. So they got to a point where they started pranking one another. And the escalation to these pranks got so bad that at one point, Jared Padalecki goes to walk inside his trailer, and it is destroyed to the point where no human being should ever actually live in a trailer like this ever. Like, this specific one, they had to actually get him a new trailer because Jensen Ackles did a pretty disturbing kind of prank to it. Still can't get any details as to what, but...
Oh, it's still secret.
It's still secret. Huh. So they did get talking to, and they had to put a truce to their little war back and forth with each other as far as these pranks are concerned. But it became open season for everybody else in the cast. So these two guys have been leading this show by essentially like having fun and making sure that everything's a joke and everyone has a good time, and by pranking everybody they possibly can and messing up the scenes on purpose just to keep it nice and loose and make sure everyone is having a good time. And I really like the idea, especially with how much this show has been around and how much everyone seems to enjoy being there. I think it makes it even better to just hear that.
Yeah, that's a really cool
story. That is cool. I like that.
Very cool. Well, my last one, personal touches are pretty prominent with a lot of filmmakers. Hitchcock appears in all of his movies. John Landis always has a character say, see you next Wednesday. But my favorite is Sam Raimi's choice to put his crappy, crappy car, which he calls the classic, into almost all of his films. The 1973 Oldsmobile Delta. A really crappy car, continues to pop up all of his movies as his own like personal cameo. He actually, I think, has 4 of them now, and they are shipped all around wherever his movies are being filmed for placement in his movies or the TV show. They were in Ash vs. Evil Dead. They originally popped up in Evil Dead. Uncle Ben's car in Spider-Man, that's the Delta. It was in Darkman. It's been in everything. There were rumors it was even disassembled and placed in parts of The Quick and the Dead because it was a Western, so there wouldn't be a car. But supposedly there were parts around that set that actually made it to film. It's just a wonderful little piece of Hollywood behind the scenes that makes me smile.
I'm rewatching every single one of those movies and looking for that same car. How have I not noticed that?
I don't know, but you should. You should. You should rewatch them just because they're all great.
They are great, but yeah. I am just surprised. My jaw was actually a little bit dropped. I didn't realize.
Any real quick honorable mentions before we get to listener comments? Anything you guys want to mention? Okay.
I'm good.
I will. I have to mention this then. Basically, okay. I just said that for myself.
You really did. Yeah, you just want
to
get it.
You wanted to bring your own honorable mentions. Somebody needs to write this down. Aaron had an honorable mention and try to weasel his way onto there.
I was going to say, since when does he advocate for us to do honorable mentions?
I need one. Alfred Hitchcock, when he did Psycho, he was so adamant that people not come into the movie after it started. He actually forbid it. So people were not allowed to come into the movie after it started showing. They weren't allowed to see the movie until the next screening. So, you know, in this day and age, people show up 20 minutes late. It wasn't allowed. They were not allowed in that movie afterward. And to me, that's a fascinating little piece of trivia. He even made a joke that, you know, what did he say? Not even the president of the United States, not the theater manager's brother, not even the Queen of England, God bless her, will be allowed in the theater after the beginning of each showing of Psycho. I just love that because it's just such a cool little Hitchcock thing to do. Yeah, you can play my movie, but you're going to play it my way, which nobody would do in this day and age. It's just kind of cool.
Lock the doors.
Yeah, and we each have some listener picks from the Facebook group. We always put the topic in the Facebook group. Manda, you've got a couple?
Well, I only have one left because I mentioned the other ones from Kyle and Scotch already. But Tomas says, Steve Buscemi was a firefighter and always stayed...
Buscemi.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
You know what? Buscemi sounds different.
It's fine. And I like this guy and I love this story. Anyway, he was a firefighter and always stayed in touch with his old company in New York. When 9/11 happened, he immediately returned to them, put on a suit and helped for days. And I think that's awesome. I love that story.
Yeah, that's a really cool one.
That is a very cool one. All right, so Jennifer Miller says, the reason we saw so little of Jaws was the robot shark didn't work. I love that one.
That's a great one.
It is a great one. And you specifically gave me the short one, and I still managed to trip all over it. Awesome!
I want to thank you for pointing that out.
Why don't you just try that again in Spanish?
I do recommend people, if you have a Blu-ray player, go get the Jaws Blu-ray and watch the documentary on the making of Jaws, because that is fascinating stuff to watch.
What was the documentary on Spielberg?
Oh, the one was on HBO.
Yeah, that one is great.
But I like that one because it's just focused on Jaws.
I know. I'm just saying, if you want to see a lot of history and behind the scenes stuff, that was a really, really cool documentary.
It was, yeah. All right, what else you got that you can screw up?
Nate Bruce says, the chest bursting scene in Alien was 100% real in that the actors didn't know what was going to happen. And that's actually very true. And I do love that one. Every time I had a chance to see the documentary or the behind the scenes on Alien, I do love seeing them break that scene down and show you how nobody going into that had an idea what was happening. They were just like, we're acting. Oh my God, I'm covered in goo.
That was actually my favorite comment, because when I first read it, I'm like, they really burst an alien out of somebody's chest?
Oh, Aaron.
That's a fascinating story. Did you have any other ones, John?
No.
Okay.
I'm good.
All right. Angela Lee Wallach. I just saw Ethan Hawke tell the story on the Graham Norton Show. Ethan's first serious movie was Dead Poets Society. He was a young college kid who wanted to be a serious actor. On set, Robin Williams was doing what he normally does, improvising and making the cast and crew crack up. Everybody enjoyed it except for Ethan Hawke. I mean, this poor kid. Nobody likes him.
He's not having a good time.
Because he was there to be serious and didn't want to laugh. That made Robin try even harder to get Ethan to laugh. Ethan thought Robin couldn't stand him. When Ethan was finished, he went back home to school. A few weeks later, he got a call from a big shot Hollywood agent who said, Robin's my client, and he said that I should book you because you're going to be a star. Ethan signed up with that agent, and he's still with that agent today.
That is very, very cool.
That will make you weep a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
Amanda, are you crying?
A little teary-eyed.
Okay, that's just ridiculous.
It was very sweet.
Pump the brakes. Oh, and just thinking
he's not around anymore, and it's just sad.
Yeah, it's a beautiful story. Anyway, David McGraw, when Keanu Reeves gave $75 million of his earnings from the Matrix sequels to special effects crew and costume designers of the films because he insisted they were the true heroes of the film. He also gave a Harley Davidson motorcycle to each member of the stunt team, and he gave a $20,000 Christmas bonus to a set builder on the movies that he heard was having financial difficulties, and that's only the tip of the iceberg when it comes to cool Keanu Reeves stories. Love that guy. I will say that's not entirely accurate. I think that's been an urban folk tale for a long time. It's partially true. The back end deal basically put some of the money back into the franchise to ensure the special effects and costume crew could continue working on the franchise for the duration. But it's more along the lines of what he did on Devil's Advocate and The Replacements, which is what he gave up part of his asking price so that the studio could afford to hire like Al Pacino and Gene Hackman for those roles. So he's incredibly generous, just maybe not $75 million generous. I think
he also does a lot of things for people in general. Like, he's constantly out trying to help other people. He never takes advantage of the wealth that he has, it seems.
He's got a Porsche, I think, so he's taking some advantage, right? Like,
have you seen the clothes he wears? He's not in a wagon.
I know people say he rides the bus, but I'm pretty sure that's just a random occurrence. It's not something he does often.
No, but he does do a lot of charitable things. And no, helps he's out. It's
great guy okay. by all accounts.
But I didn't know that the...
He's a great guy. That's enough.
Wow.
God. You know, this is supposed to be a happy show, and you keep trying to shut us down. What is your problem? Do you want to talk about it?
Well, I mean, he's a great guy and everything, but come on now.
Johnny, you're a great guy, too.
Oh, that's what this
no,
is
No, I
about.
Am not.
Obviously. Yes, you are.
No, you're not.
He's deep not. Down. No,
have you heard of this whole episode?
I don't have, like, giving away $75 million kind of money.
You don't have $75 million.
Would you give it away if you couldn't, if you had it?
I wouldn't give it away. I give it away now.
Wow. All right. Well, if you have a great or fun behind-the-scenes story you want to share, find this post in our Hollywood Outsider Facebook group or hit us up on Twitter, and we would like to hear what they are. Because there's just so many. Is there any that you heard that you didn't mention? No? Well, I guess it would be an honorable mention, right?
Yeah. And like Aaron, like I don't know if you met him, but he gets a little annoyed when you bring up honorable mentions and he's not ready for it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he does. Sometimes he'll just cut them from the episode and doesn't even tell you.
Anyway, I don't know what you're talking about. So is there any recent film or TV recommendations we haven't previously talked about? Amanda?
Yes. What is there it you want is. To talk about? Set It Up. It is on Netflix. It is so good. And I'm not saying that because I am a girl and it's a romantic comedy. It's a really, really good movie. No, seriously. It has the romance aspect, but not in the way that you might think. It does end up going a little bit more predictable, but it still was a really good feel-good movie. Mm-hmm. It was a movie that made me laugh incredibly. The dialogue is really funny, and there's a lot of wit between the two characters, the two assistants. Basically, what the film is two overworked and underpaid assistants are trying to set up their bosses together. And so since they know every scope of their bosses' lives, they're going to try to, in every way, keep their bosses dating together so they can have some bit of freedom and life back. And it's just a very down-to-earth, but moving and also just fun movie that has a lot of good laughs in it and a lot of really good moments. It just came out on June 15th on Netflix, so absolutely check it out. I've already had a couple of people reach out to me after I had made a Facebook post in the group that I had seen it, and they also said they really liked it. So I'm not alone.
I'm not alone.
It has like 94% like on Google. It's doing exceptionally well.
You do rave about that. I do want to go back, and I'm sorry, but we forgot one. Ty Nelson, Zach Galifianakis, taking care of homeless people. It sounded like he remained it grounded, and I've never heard this. Have you guys ever heard this?
I did not.
That's no, I haven't heard of this either.
Okay.
Well, that's kind of awesome, though.
Yeah. That
good for him.
Cool. So your movie's cool. Zach Galifianakis is cool.
Is there anything cool
John,
for you?
Do you have anything you want to talk about that's cool? Anything you've recently seen?
I went and revisited Stargate Universe on Hulu right now, and it's been a while since I sat down and revisited that show, and I got all the way through it, and I'm still mad that I got canceled after the second season because of the way it ended, but it's still a wonderful, great, fun show. I got to the third episode of Cloak and Dagger, and I'm still kind of in. It hasn't convinced me to stop watching it yet, so that's interesting.
Okay.
I have another one.
Oh, you have another one.
I do.
And another one.
No, this is
and the another one.
I've only been watching like three different things. Okay, that's it.
What's the other one?
Handmaid's Tale. I understand a lot of people might have watched the first season.
Well, this was a happy show. And now maybe, we're all sad.
But hold on. And maybe gave up on it because let's be very honest, that first season was incredibly rough to get through. The second season has a ton more progression in terms of the story and the characters. And you're no longer like locked inside a box. Mm. I feel like the first season kept you where you couldn't, you feel like you couldn't escape because that's how the characters felt, and it grows exponentially in the second season. So give it a chance if you haven't watched it at all. See it. If you are stuck on not watching season two, get over that and do it.
Mm, all right. Pass.
And I haven't really pass seen anything, you. So we're going to go ahead and pass on you. Here's what we are going to do. As we close the show out, before we do that, we have something of a special announcement for everyone. But instead of listening to me yammer on again, I decided I would let somebody else do the heavy lifting. So to deliver that announcement, we have a special appearance from a founding member of Ho, Occasional Santa, and a resident cruise director, Mr. Brian Williams. Take it away, B.
Hey, y'all. I've been brought from Christmas future to let the listeners know that there is a new Ho joining the team. And this time, I just hope she doesn't get offended because I just called her a Ho. So beginning July 18th, welcome aboard, Amanda Sink.
Yay! Oh, thanks, Brian.
Yeah!
I was like, I don't know if this is pre-recorded or if it's live.
No, it's legit. Can't you hear the dogs?
I do now. Thank you so much for that special introduction.
Well, you're very welcome. Glad to make you a permanent part of the family. Well, this family. Well, shut. You know what I mean. Anyway. I mean,
are you proposing?
The whole family.
Are you proposing?
Not yet, but hey.
Just wait for that cruise. You never know.
That's right.
Make sure to go to Winterstruck Travel and look for the events because the cruise is coming up. But thanks for doing that, Brian. I'm sure that she really appreciates that.
Thank you. That was very sweet.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's my pleasure. So anyway, glad to have you bring a little class to the joint. It's been needed for a while, John.
What? Let me know when she starts doing it.
It'll be a while.
Hey, we'll let you go back to doing whatever you're doing, and hopefully you'll come back on an upcoming episode sometime.
Yeah. Maybe.
Yes. Don't say maybe. Yes.
I got a feeling your phone's going to be blowing up.
Can I take my pants back off now? I put them on just for you guys.
Rip them off. Yeah, no, pants off, dance off.
All right.
Ironically, John's been talking about that all night. True story.
Yeah, Brian without his pants on. It's been a thing tonight.
Well, hey, I can't blame you.
All right. We'll take care, man.
All right, guys. Catch y'all later.
Okay, now we are back to us, and yes, so Amanda's going to be a permanent member of the Hollywood Outsider starting on July 18th, so John, I guess you're going to have to, you guys can keep railing against each other, it's like good and evil.
Can you have some enthusiasm here?
I was enthusiastic.
No, I meant him, Aaron, not you.
Oh, him? He's Aaron.
That's true.
That's my enthusiasm.
Don't expect enthusiasm out of
I mean, the fact that he's, you know, saying words, come on.
That's always a good stepping stone.
Hey, listen here, bub. You don't get to say anything about anybody saying words ever. You don't get to make that complaint. You complain about my attitude. That's fine. Apparently, I'm an asshole and I'm a dick, according to the Westworld.
Hey, wait. Don't take it personally, but you're a dick.
It's nothing personal. It's just your personality.
Yeah,
I said
with all due respect. That means it's okay.
God. So I don't want to in joke it. I do Beyond Westworld, which is another Westworld podcast, and somebody basically went in our Facebook group and said, Aaron, I don't know you, but you're a dick. And then said later on, but I didn't mean that personally. I'm like, yeah, you didn't mean it personally. You just called me a dick. I'm like, what other option is that? He's a dick. So congratulations, and I hope you enjoyed
that.
Thank
you. Yeah. Thank you. Excited to do it.
All right. Now, listener comments or email from feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can send them all there if you'd like. Join our Facebook group or on Twitter @BuyPopcorn. Remember to grab the hoe and the go. There are Android apps, Spotify, or subscribe and review us in Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, thehollywoodoutsider.com is our website, or your podcast app of choice. You can find John's artwork on Insta and everywhere else at rjohn.draws, Amanda on her other podcast, Smirk, and me on Remake This Movie Right, Beyond Westworld, and The Blacklist Exposed. Thanks, guys, for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for having me, and welcome aboard, Amanda.
Thank you, Johnny. I'm super excited to do this every week and hopefully debate with you.
Okay, are we still on this? I mean, we're kind of over now,
no,
right?
No, I just hope it continues with different topics.
I mean, you could have just said thank you. You didn't have to like make a whole thing about it.
No, it's a good thing.
He doesn't understand what
that
means.
I like to spar with you.
He doesn't understand what good means. He doesn't.
No, No, I fake it. I don't know what it actually means.
I'm going to send you the Webster Dictionary definition later on.
You'll see his picture under evil. It's just above good.
Yeah, that's how the letters work.
All right, everybody. I hope you have a wonderful 4th of July holiday. If you're listening to it before then, if you're listening to it after, happy whatever day you happen to be listening to this. Thanks for listening. And remember, the next time you head into the theater with your movie pass, buy popcorn. I'm sorry, Amanda. This is like your inauguration. Do you want to do it?
My inauguration? Well, yeah, you had a really handy line, but I'll try it.
No, I'll still leave it in so they know how much cooler mine was. Okay.
Perfect. Remember, the next time you head to a theater, buy popcorn.
Yeah, it wasn't as good.
It wasn't. No. With your movie pass. Does that make it better?
Don't make it dirty.
With my
movie pass.
What happened here? How did I get stuck in this conversation?
I don't know.
I don't know what that number, what comes after 2? Is it 3 or is it
2.5. Are you metric?
2.5?
Exactly.
That one sucked. It's like when your mom got the 2.5, you're like, ooh, and then she goes 2.75. Okay, I better do it. That's it.
I never did that. I just went 1, 2, 3. You're done. That's it. We're done.
No, my mom pulled the 2.5, 2.75 bit.
That doesn't reinforce anything. That's just bad parenting. Sorry.
Oh, my mother is a saint.
Obviously not so much.
She's smiling down from heaven for me right now.
Yeah. Probably going, you'll be up here in 2, 2.2, 2.3. You're almost here. 2.4.
2.75. You're going to be here in a second. And I'm like, no, I got to finish everything real quick.
All right. If you're ready. Are you ready?
I told you I was ready, Freddy, like 5 minutes ago, and that wasn't good enough.
I was not going to take that seriously.
What about say, rock and roll?
Yes, Lord, overlords. I am ready to go.
No.
God made rock and roll for us. Made rock and roll for us.
John,
made rock, I like it better when he just sings to us.
It's just, why are you serenading people? Let's have some fun. This is for next week. Just remember that. So try not to say anything about this week. And we don't do the Hardwick. Not here at the Hoe.
I don't want to talk about Hardwick. I'm not a